You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580. Welcome aboard. It's New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design in Traverse City, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
It is so good to be here. We are live. And in the flesh. 3/14/24. Great to be here on Thursday morning. If you do have a question of a financial nature that we might be able to help you with, our phone number and or text number is, Ron, please.
It's all the same. 947-0023. That's the 231 area code, but you can shoot us a text at 947-0023 or call that number and be on the telephone.
That's kind of radical.
It's radical.
You only have to remember one number?
Say that, Heidi.
I said, do you only have to remember one number,
that's
Ron?
That's very nice, yes.
It is nice because before, it was... Yeah. There's a lot to remember.
It was. Well, we wrote it down in front of us, but no.
That's right. And that voice is Heidi Cartwright.
Heidi.
Our own RICP Managing Director.
Well, I'm happy to be here with everyone today, so I'm looking
That's
forward to it.
It's great to have you. Thanks. So it's acting like spring.
For now.
Grandview Parkway is being worked on.
Yeah.
Busting the crap out of that.
You guys just came down 8th Street then to get into Traverse City?
Yeah.
It's a lot more crowded on 8th Street than it was last week.
Yeah. I call it samurai walking. I was out there this morning about 7:30 and decided not to cross at a crosswalk and heard from a motorist in regards to their chagrin at my not crossing at the crosswalk because it is that crazy intense. I was not willing to cross there because you've got potentially four ways to get smushed, if you will,
from the traffic coming directly.
Now, this is at, Fair Street or whatever that is, right next to the fire station right there. So coming from that direction, then people going left onto the same street, and then people, cars, if you will, then coming right. So, excuse me. Three potential ways to get smushed.
A bicyclist was hit there, I think, yesterday morning.
I believe it. Yeah. It just, normally I'm not fearful walking. It's relatively calm, but it's just, wow.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, beware, of course. They're trying to route traffic around that work, and boy, they're going at it to happen to catch a glimpse of it in building all the infrastructure and all that.
Well, last night I actually just drove east on Front Street because I wanted to see how does it work. And it was later in the evening, and I'm like, I'm going to do this while there's not a lot of cars there so I can figure out how I can get different places.
That's a good idea, preparing.
Yeah. You should be a financial planner.
Yeah.
And the other voice there, Deanne Jennings, welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be in the studio this morning.
Great to have you, our director of operations. She's going to be adding the stats. Heidi's going to be talking about 529 to Roths with the Secure 2.0 Act and what that's going to mean, could mean for you and or those grandchildren. Opening up the options, too, for 529s, period, for grandparents to that asset not to be counted against the FAFSA. So that's one part of many improvements that have been made to help fund these grandchildren's future education needs and wants. Now, before we get going in the material, 529 plans will be discussed in more detail on April 17th at our own Lunch and Learn at Prout, 231-947-3992. In it, Heidi Cartwright will be discussing the benefits of this tax advantage savings plan designed to help pay for education expenses.
The 529 account.
The 529 account. You heard it.
And what date is that? Books.
April 17th.
April
17th.
That
is from noon to 1 mm-hmm. on Wednesday, April 17th, 2 days after April 15th.
Which is tax day.
It's the first time we've had actually tax day, I think, in 3 or 4 years on April 15th. We've had all these extensions due to, you know, things.
Holidays.
And all that good
COVID.
Stuff.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah, thanks. Yeah, Medicare 101 on May 15th. Look at that. I mean, we're just hitting home run after home run. By the way, when does the, speaking of rabbit trails, when does the major league season start?
Some teams, it's actually the end of March. Tigers, I'll have to look up. It's like March 30th or April. I'll look that up.
So a couple weeks out.
Yeah, it used to be like April 4th, 5th, 6th. Now they're getting started late March.
Yeah.
By the way, the Lunch and Learns, though, called Lunch and Learn because you learn.
Yes.
But you don't have to bring a brown bag, do you? You have lunch for people there?
Right.
We do.
Jeez.
Yes.
Amazing.
A delicious lunch.
There is no free lunch unless you come to this class, okay? Medicare 101, May 15th, Don McConnell and Laverno Whitcup from Ford Insurance will discuss Medicare. They will simplify the topic and help you navigate through your questions. And that, by the way, is a great class. Yep. I participated directly in it. Thank you very much.
And it's great.
Enjoyed it.
It's great for people who maybe you're a year out from Medicare. Mm-hmm. But going to a class like this, you can start to get familiar with the terms and some of the decisions you're going to have to make. So even if you're not quite 65 yet, you're still welcome.
It is complicated. Mm-hmm. And, boy, they do a very good job. Nice overhead screens so that you can see the material. You'll have your own notebooks, all of it. And then on June 19th, estate planning wellness check with Courtney Danbrook, June 19th. On Wednesday, these are the third Wednesdays of each month. And again, Lunch and Learn, contact our office, 231-947-3992.
By the way, the Tigers start up on March 28th, Thursday, at the White Sox. And their home opener is April 5th.
April 5th,
home opener at Comerica against the Oakland Athletics, who will soon be the Vegas Baby Athletics.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
That sounds a little different.
Interesting.
They're moving.
Sounds almost risque, the Vegas Athletics.
We'll see if they change their name.
Don't go down that road. Okay. Three mistakes investors make during election years. Can you imagine that? Three? So offensive. Capital Group. This is from Capital Group. They've been managing money since about 1934. Investing during an election year can be tough on the nerves, and 2024 promises to be no different. Politics can bring out strong emotions and biases. Hmm. But investors would be wise to put these aside, if possible, when making investment decisions. I added the if possible. I know how difficult that can be.
It's not personal, it's business. Right? It's not political, it's business.
Yeah, I always hated that axiom. Benjamin Graham, the father of value investing, famously noted that in the short run, the market is a voting machine, but in the long run, it is a weighing machine. That is a great quote. It wasn't literally referring to the intersection and of elections and investing, but he could have been. Markets can be especially choppy during election years, with sentiment often changing as quickly as candidates open their mouths.
Mm.
And we get that. A great detail in regard to that. Graham's first made the analogy in 1934 in his book Security Analysis. Since then, there have been 23 election cycles. We've analyzed them all to help you prepare for those potentially volatile periods. Now, mistake number one, investors worry too much about which party wins the election. Now, investors are people, and that is not saying that you should discount worrying about who's going to win the election. I remember my grandfather staying up until, 3 or 4 a.m. to see who won the election between Nixon and Humphrey in, what was that?
68,
maybe. Yeah. So it does make a difference, and we're not discounting that. Investors can run into trouble, though, when they place too much importance on election results. Do not bet the farm on the election or on politics. That's because elections have, historically speaking, made essentially no difference when it comes to long-term investment returns. None. Zero. Nada.
Zip.
Yeah. Now, some would argue.
So do you think some people, right when the election, when the results are announced, they react to that and change some of their investments,
well,
strategies?
In anticipation of the, the election, you know, who's going to win, who's in the lead. You know, if my guy wins, what will that mean? If it's contested, what will that mean? I mean, we all think, I do, of the upset that can happen in terms of one winner versus another. So presidents get far too much credit to further quote what they are saying, not Dennis, and far too much blame for the health of the U.S. economy and the state of the financial markets. There are many other variables that determine economic growth and market returns, and frankly, presidents have very little influence over them. Now, I would argue that some presidents have had significant influence on the long-term impacts of the economy with their cheering style.
Their policy decisions can impact businesses in different ways.
Specifically, Mr. Ronald Reagan. He, I think, made an incredible difference in the positivity of the United States and its attitudes towards itself, if you will.
Isn't it hard to believe that Clinton, when he was in as a Democrat, had a Newt Gingrich Republican Congress?
Mm-hmm.
So they had to work together, and they had a balanced budget. Well, yeah, balanced budget in the sense there was still debt, but there was no deficit.
Last time we've had that kind of a situation, and they really did work together, and you know, quite well amongst other things that were going on, but they did work well together politically. Absolutely. What should matter more to investors is staying invested. Although past results are not predictive of future returns, we can say that with some emphasis here. A $1,000 investment in the S&P 500 index, $1,000. And just because you really wanted to know this, Ron, I gave an equivalent value with inflation at 4% over 90 years. 90 years? That would have been about $34,000 in today's dollars. Yep. So not chump change, you know, some real money. Would be worth $22 million today. $1,000 equals $22 million.
That's still a good return on investment,
I think. It is indeed.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? During this time, there have been 8 Democrats and 7 Republican presidents. Getting out of the market to avoid a certain party or candidate in office could have severely distracted from an investor's long-term returns. Severely, I would say subtracted. Oh, they said detracted, not distracted. Sorry. He's reading challenge this morning. By design, elections have clear winners and losers, of course. But the real winners were investors who had avoided the temptation to base their decisions around election results and stayed invested for the long haul. So who are we trying to serve here? I get it that this is our industry. And necessarily that you might discount what it is that we're saying. I get that. I am as jaded as anyone. But given the reality of the stats and this graph, here, you see, Ron?
Straight up.
Straight up, almost.
Like a mountain.
Yes. Given the reality of our own U.S. economy, that has been able to withstand craziness in terms of tax rates, sometimes in terms of policy. Well, it's all different today. There are some differences. I get that, too. We're not here to argue that. You can hear that on other programs within WTCM. I get that. But over time, diversification, investing in the United States economy is still, if not the best, one of the very best places to invest over time. Okay? Mistake number two, investors get spooked by primary season volatility. We're past the primary season now. We don't have to talk about it anymore. Okay. Markets hate uncertainty, and what's more uncertain than primary season? Volatility caused by this uncertainty is often short-lived. Short-lived. Now, next, policy proposals during primaries often target specific industries, putting pressure on share prices. Case in point, the healthcare sector has been in the crosshairs for a number of election cycles. We get that. Oh, my gosh. Heated rhetoric over drug pricing put pressure on many stocks in the pharmaceutical and managed care industries. Other sectors have had similar bouts of weakness prior to elections. When everyone is worried that a new government policy is going to come along and destroy a sector, that concern is usually overblown, Mr. Robert Lovelace, who's been with them for 38 years, says. And I would agree. They tend to be overblown because you get some wild statement, perhaps, from one party to another about what they're going to do or propose or go with. And 2 years later, what were they saying about that? Oh, that died, you know, that died in the House or whatever.
I think American business and industry are so, resolute that regardless of what nonsense the government throws at them, they figure out a way to adapt, to get around it. It may make it more expensive on everybody, but they figure out a way.
They do.
Yeah.
And amen to that, Ron. Honestly, what I was thinking, they survive, and for the best companies, they continue to grow in spite of the political winds. So those who listen to inspirational tapes and or series, me from Earl Nightingale, success is the achievement, achievement of a worthy ideal over time. That's what he defines as success. So each of us have our own wheels, if you will, that we're spinning in terms of work, career, all of the rest. I'm responsible is the best, one of the best comments, I think, related to that. So there is always going to be noise out there. How do you continue to pull that responsibility back to yourself? All right.
Talk about spinning. I really am fascinated of this positive spin of this could be an opportunity for you to purchase.
Yes.
You know, to invest.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Uh-huh, honey.
Whoever that was, I mean, that was just the best. Regardless of who wins, stocks with the strong long-term fundamentals have often rallied once the campaign spotlight fades. This pre-election market turbulence can create buying opportunities. She stole directly from the notes. For investors with a contrarian point of view and the strength to tolerate what could be short-term volatility. What were we hearing? One of your stats. That's going to be very interesting about real estate prices. Mm-hmm. Could be an opportunity. Mistake number three. Oh, we still have time. Investors try to time the markets around politics. If you're nervous about the markets in 24, you're not alone. Presidential candidates often draw attention to the country's problems, and campaigns regularly amplify negative messages. So maybe it could be or should be no surprise that investors have tended to be more conservative than with their portfolios ahead of elections. By contrast, equity-focused mutual funds have seen the highest net inflows in the year immediately after an election, which is usually going to hurt overall returns over time, given their studies that they show in way too much detail, and we don't have time to discuss here.
I have a relevant text here from somebody.
Yes, let's do it.
Nice point about the party in power. Many of us thought the market would fall when Biden got in. I seriously considered putting all my 401k into cash when Trump lost. I did nothing, and I'm up probably 100k today.
That is, thank you for that text, by the way. That is a great case in point. The market, about 39,000 on the Dow right now. And I think when, you know, he left office, I think maybe 29,000. Anyway, it's up a bunch since then. And as many of us root for a different candidate, if you can stay focused again on the United States and its potential compared to other countries, and staying diversified within your own risk tolerance, ooh, man, what a difference it makes.
What a difference it makes. Hey, the same texter had a question.
Sure.
First, how does one officially retire? Is there paperwork to file, announcements? Then how to collect the benefits? More paperwork, I assume. And then a follow-up. If I retire and after some months realize I can't afford it and I have to go back to work, can I unretire?
Those are great questions. They are really good.
Yes.
We should have a show on retirement. I mean, really, right?
I think we have something there.
So, Heidi, you're more methodical than I am, so I'm going to lean on you on this one. What would you generally say to this person who's asking some very valid questions about how do you retire?
Well, there's no actual document that I'm aware of that says, I am retiring, that you put in your own file. It's more withdrawing from your career that you've established. And that's something that we help clients do in those years, especially right before retirement, making sure that you have everything in place. It's something that you want to plan for. But, you know, as the question posed, you can unretire by going back to work. Or maybe your company calls you and says, wow, we really need your help on this project. You might do a consulting stint with them. So it's really an individual choice. Usually it's meant you have stopped doing the career that you've done over a long period of time, and you're no longer going to work for that company, or you're no longer going to own your own company anymore, and you're going to move into a new period of life. But some people never retire. Some people just continue. They love what they do. And some people want to do something else, and they find a new passion once they retire from their original career.
As far as starting your benefits when you retire, mm-hmm. or stopping them if you unretire, if you have a financial planner, just call them. If you don't have a financial planner, how do you say, all right, I'm done, send the 401k money or the Social Security or whatever?
Yeah, you would call the plan administrator. You'd call the customer service on your statement. If you have IRAs or if you have 401ks or any kind of retirement accounts. But I would just say that you can tell if you're a regular listener to this show, you know that the rules and regulations can be quite complex. And there are certain ramifications of moving money around in retirement accounts. So getting some help or getting some advice on that, I would say, is crucial to making sure that you're not paying a higher tax bill or creating a situation where you have to pay a penalty.
I wouldn't recommend anyone approach retirement without seeing a counsel, getting counsel on it, period. I don't care how simple your situation is, and I'll just make a bold-faced statement like that. Why? Because you want to consider what your Social Security benefits are. Next, do I have a pension? What about the 403B or the 401K? I mean, the list is just endless. Well, how complicated can it be? Well, believe me, as you mentioned,
it's complicated.
It can be stinking really complicated. I think the most interesting thing that texter said was, what if I'm in this for 3 to 4 months and find I don't have enough money? Well, that's probably a common question or theme, or how do I draw it? That's why we do financial plans for our clients when they come in, if they want to go through the process, if you will, so that you can know, am I going to have enough? Is it going to last throughout my lifetime? Given the estimates and the numbers ran, given what I think that I'm going to need and all the rest, How's this going to work? That can be a key component of success for retirement. It's another phase. I just say make the most of it. So before we go into Heidi's 529s, I do want to discuss gold. Now, the reason for this is coming from a non-gold-related company named LPL, LPL Research. And I thought it was interesting. Now, while I'm reluctant to talk about prices of any given commodity, as you listeners know, because who knows? Peter Lynch had a great comment about this, the former manager of the Fidelity Magellan Fund, which was an incredibly successful mutual fund years and years ago. He said he'd long given up trying to guess where the price of gold was or going to go. But here's an article, I think some points here that are well taken. Bullion broke new ground last week after rallying to a record high. So gold is at all-time highs now. Growing investor confidence for a Federal Reserve rate cut this summer dragged down yields in the dollar, creating a tailwind for gold. The breakout above resistance at $2,075 was also a major technical development, confirmed by positive momentum that suggests the rally could continue. And then global central bank demand has been another key catalyst and has shown no sign of slowing down, while a rebound in demand from gold-related ETFs also could provide additional support for the yellow metal. So there are a lot of things there that could cause gold to remain strong. Now, obviously, this could be wrong next week. I get that. This is just an interesting article I don't often see from commentariats, if you will. New highs are almost immediately followed by the question of how high can prices go? Technical analysis provides a framework for answering this question. Gold's rally to new highs was preceded by a breakout from what is called a bullish flag formation, a chart pattern characterized by a temporary consolidation in a strong uptrend. Then they go on to talk about breakouts to the upside, minimum technical base price objective near the 2250 to 2350 range. Most people would say, well, that's just about a 10% increase. We'll see. It's just very interesting to watch because inflation is coming down. Gold is still going up. They're tending to react inversely to each other. It's because a weaker dollar, more demand from central banks, and what we could see is more demand as well from ETFs, exchange-traded funds, that invest in these. And we're going to hear that stat from Deanne. Price action in gold over the last 6 months has been a bit paradoxical when considering the market backdrop of receding inflation and aggressive risk-on positioning. The Fed's transition from rate hikes to rate cuts, gold has done very well. Like most decisions in investing, it is all relative. So as interest rates move lower on the back of a potential Fed policy pivot, both nominal and real yields became less attractive relative to gold, which offers no yield. Furthermore, the dollar has followed interest rates lower, providing further tailwind, just to go on and discuss what I just mentioned or provide case in point. So I just thought, given all the noise that we hear about gold and silver advertisers, hearing from an analyst company that has actually gone and done some of the research there into the price action of gold, it's certainly creating some interest. And as always, what is the key here? Diversification. These characteristics during periods of elevated, let me back up. During periods of elevated market volatility and heightened geopolitical risk, gold also serves as a safe haven asset. These characteristics help shape the Wall Street adage of hold gold and hope it doesn't go up. So while we watch it with interest, going up too much in the gold price can be really disconcerting for a lot of folks.
Hey, one quick text in reference to a recent text. The guy that said, I was going to take my money out of my 401k and put it into cash after Trump lost and Biden won, but I didn't.
Yes.
And he's up 100K. Somebody said, if you did that, you would have been down 20% if you just put it into cash.
Because of inflation's impact.
Yeah.
And a great point. Further point. Thank you very much. Yes. Wow, that text line is really handy.
Yes.
To hear what people are thinking. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Now, Heidi, 529s to Roth. 529 plans, education plans, now offer transfers to Roths. Let's hear more, shall we?
And just as a preface, because we talked a little bit about this at the beginning of the show, this isn't just grandparents for grandchildren, which is a great thing. They can do that. You can set up this education, the 529 account for grandchildren. You can also set it up for your children, and you can also set one up for yourself as well. So just want to make it clear, it's not just grandparents to grandchildren, but we focus on that because that's an opportunity for grandparents to give back to their grandchildren. So.
Right, because it's not counted against FAFSA as a key benefit, too.
Right, and we went over that a couple weeks ago with our FAFSA changes. So a year ago, the Secure 2.0 was put into effect, and one of the provisions in there allow excess dollars in 529 college saving plans to be rolled over to Roth IRAs. So 2024 was the trigger year. This is the first year that this is available to people. And I am bringing you this information from the Ed Slack group. And so I want to help you understand the finer points of doing a transaction like this. So, yes, if you have excess dollars in your 529, you can now proceed with a rollover or a transfer from the 529 to a Roth IRA for the beneficiary of that account. Now, the maximum amount that can be rolled over from the 529 account is $35,000. This is a lifetime maximum, and it is per beneficiary. So if you have four grandchildren, you have four different 529 accounts, it's $35,000 for each grandchild.
Correct. Over a period of years, and we'll look at that detail next. It's $35,000 over a number of years.
Right.
Yeah.
And why would you have leftover funds where you funded the college education, the students out of school, and you've got money left over?
Right. Okay. Well, maybe they got a scholarship.
Okay.
Maybe they're an athlete, and they made one of the sports teams, and they didn't have to spend as much as anticipated. Maybe they went to a different school. There's a lot of reasons that you could end up with excess funds. So the Roth IRA that is created must be in the name of the 529 beneficiary. So not the grantor of the funds, the people who put the money into the 529, but the beneficiary who it was intended to help. The 529 plan must have been open for more than 15 years. So this is something that is important to keep in mind, because if you're thinking of opening a 529, this could be a benefit. The earlier that you start it, the less time you're going to have to wait once they're out of school if they have excess funds to move those over. The 529 rollover amounts cannot include any 529 contributions or earnings made in the preceding five-year period. So this is a little tricky provision. Dennis and I talked about this before the show. We're not really sure how they can track that, but it is in the rules there. So rollovers are subject to the annual Roth IRA contribution limit. Now, this is important because, remember, we said the maximum you could move over was $35,000. But you may have to do this in a number of years.
Well, you would have to do it because the maximum allowed in any given year is how much, Heidi?
Well, this year in 2024 is $7,000.
Right, yeah.
Because it matches the contribution limits for just opening a regular Roth IRA. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So last year, the contribution limit was $6,500. So it can change every year. So another provision is that the beneficiary must have compensation in the year of the rollover at least equal to the amount being rolled over. So that's that earned income provision that the beneficiary has to have some earned income in order to do this.
So Junior gets a job, makes $4,000 in that year working this summer. You decide. Well, that 529 plan's been in there, and I, you know, whether or not you think they're going to use it, that's another question. But let's say they haven't. Let's say, they're 24. You know, obviously
hopefully,
a bit older.
Hopefully with that degree, they're making a little more than
$4,000. Yeah, right. But let's just say it's $4,000. They could then, you could convert or transfer $4,000 tax-free from that 529 to the Roth IRA in the name of that grandchild or child as well. Yes. It doesn't necessarily have to be a grandchild. But if that's their earnings, it's $4,000. If their earnings are $6,000, it's $6,000. You see what I'm saying?
It can even be for yourself as well, if you're the owner and the beneficiary.
Now, that's doubly radical. Mm-hmm. You've got a 529 plan in your own name.
Okay, but you have to have had that money in there for 15 years. So this is long-term planning here, right? Another thing to keep in mind, there are no income limits restricting the 529 to Roth IRA rollover for either the beneficiary or the 529 owner.
So, let's say Junior as a 401k plan made $150,000, can't do a Roth IRA. The 529 to Roth is not limited.
That's right. And that is actually a great benefit.
That's double crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, this rollover from the 529 plan to the Roth IRA is a non-taxable transaction. So as long as you do that trustee-to-trustee transfer, you will not expose any of this transaction to tax.
Now, please don't call us asking if you can convert your 401k to a 529 so you can give some to your grandchild, okay? No, you can't do that.
So another point is when former 529 dollars are ultimately distributed from the Roth IRA, any funds rolled over will be treated as if they were rolled over from another Roth IRA. So the ordering rules will apply. And this gets into another topic we can talk about some other time. But when you withdraw money from a Roth IRA, there are ordering rules that are associated with if there's going to be a penalty or not, how old you have to be to take the money out of the Roth. So, but just keep in mind that it would be treated as a rolled over amount.
Yeah, see, what that means is the ordering rules. If you get in line and you order the burger with fries, but you order special, you know, onions and all the rest, you may take longer than someone else. That's the ordering rules we're talking about.
Right? That's right. And if anybody is a listener to the show, if they ever heard of those five-year rules, those are the things we're talking about with the Roth IRAs.
Thank you for that clarification.
So there is an unexpected benefit that I'd like to point out. Ed Slatt writes in his article that this year, if you wanted to do it, double up on that rollover, you might be able to do so. You can do one if you haven't made a contribution to a Roth. You could do a 529 to a Roth as long as you meet the parameters for 2023 if it is done prior to April 15th of 2024. And you could do another one for 2024. So you could conceivably get an additional amount. So instead of being limited to the $7,000, you could do an extra $6,500 for a 2023 rollover. So.
Almost double up the amount. Given that the child or grandchild had earnings for 23, you can make a conversion for 23 up to April 15th of this year, and then make one for 24 theoretically for 2024 as long as they have those earnings. And the account's been open for 15 years. Yeah. And lastly, call us if you need more detail.
Because as you can tell, there's a lot of little nuances in these things. But
ins
what
and outs, but it's a great value, could be, for those children or grandchildren who won't be using those 529 plans.
A couple of quick comments before we get to our stats. Somebody said they had similar concerns about the market weakening after Obama was elected, that it would be negatively impacted, but they saw the market increased. Looking into it, I found the market in general viewed all the new anticipated government spending as a positive. The government liked the idea that the government was going to, or the Wall Street liked the idea the government was going to spend a bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
And silver percentage-wise has gone up more than gold recently, says this texter. So
of course.
Both precious metals doing well.
Yeah, what I wanted to say there, of course, think about in silver and gold in terms of their relationship. There is a historic divisor, if you will, between silver and gold. And as that spread widens, it may mean that silver is a better value versus gold. Silver is kind of known as being the red-headed stepchild of gold, if you will, gold always being the favored asset. But I always consider the two together in terms of, you know, what is the better value and or a precious metal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Deanne, let's hit some stats, shall we?
Absolutely. Speaking of silver and gold, the Spider Gold Trust, an exchange-traded fund, has been scorching hot in 2024, trading at all-time highs on March 5th. It closed at its most elevated level ever relative to its 50-day moving average, and that source is Bespoke. Realtor.com's latest monthly housing data showed that active listings climbed to their highest level since July 2020. While the net percentage of listings cutting sale prices rose to 22%, the highest reading seen since data began in 2016, and that source is Realtor.com.
So all of a sudden, prices have, you know, not all of a sudden, I'll just say this, prices have corrected a bit down from their stratospheric increases, and that's interesting to note because, yeah, 22%, interesting.
Yep. The number of 401k accounts worth $1 million plus at Fidelity jumped 41% in 2023 from 299,000 to 422,000. The average 401k millionaire at Fidelity is 59 years old and has been saving for 26 years, and that source is Fidelity and Yahoo Finance.
Isn't that interesting? Given the standard withdrawal rate, they go back and forth, you know, the writers of the day talking about, okay, what's a good withdrawal rate if you want that money generally to last for your lifetime and be able to pass it on to those who follow? Daddy, I really do love you. You know, that sort of thing. 4% to maybe 5%. 4% of a million is $40,000 a year, about $3,000 or so a month. 5%, about $50,000, of course. About $4,000 a month, so you know, $3,000 to $4,000 a month, approximately, as a standard withdrawal rate from an account like that.
That savings is slow and steady. That's the way to do it. While roughly 2/3 of Americans say they're saving for retirement one way or another, according to a 2023 TIAA Institute survey, the same survey showed that nearly 1 in 4 Americans have no clue where their retirement account balances stand. And that source is TIAA Institute and Yahoo Finance.
I always think of it's amazing. Every once in a while, we have someone come in that had no idea they had an account at XYZ. And there's $100,000 sitting in that account.
Yes.
We've had that happen more than once. So, yes, good
People
point.
People bring in a statement and goes, this anything?
Yeah.
They're like, yes, that is something.
Yes, that is money. Anything.
Yeah.
And in honor of St. Patrick's Day, the first St. Patrick's Day parade took place in America, not Ireland, on March 17, 1762, in New York City. It was held by Irish soldiers who were serving in the British Army. The New York City St. Patrick's Day Parade is the world's oldest civilian parade and the largest in the United States. And that source is history.com.
1762. Mm-hmm. Who would have thought?
Yeah,
a while
right.
ago.
In
that
America,
goes back
too.
A ways.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. How much time do we have here, Ron?
We have about a minute and a half.
Minute and a half.
Yep.
What should we talk about? You know, what's going on?
Well, did you know there are 4 counties in northern Michigan named after counties in Ireland?
Really? Are there really?
Really?
Wexford, Antrim, Roscommon, and Clare.
Wow.
They have those same counties in Ireland.
That sounds like northern Michigan trivia question.
Well, that's why I brought it up, because I forgot to do that today.
I always remember Clare being a big-time St. Patty's Day area, it seemed to me, and that's why, eh?
County Clare.
Yes.
Is there a parade here this year?
That's a good question. I haven't heard if there's a parade this year. I'll look. The Ancient Order of the Hibernians usually put that on.
Boy, there's an article we haven't had time to discuss today, just speaking of money again. Small cap stocks, 7 opportunities to watch in 24. I think we've got space next week to discuss this.
And we'll have to do that
next week. We'll try to cover that because this is really interesting and something that I think will be helpful to our listeners. So we're out of here, Ron. Thank you so much.
Dennis Prout. Heidi Cartwright, D.N. Jennings, Prout Financial Design, 947-3992 in Traverse City, proutfinancialdesign.com on the web. Thank you all.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Ron.